ExxonMobil is under investigation for potentially lying for decades about what it knew about climate change. Last week, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman issued a subpoena to the oil giant looking into the gaps between Exxon's own scientific findings on the real threats of climate change and its tens of millions of dollars of funding to sham think tanks devoted to denying the man-made roots of global warming. Schneiderman spoke with PBS's Frontline this week.
Were they using the best science and the most competent models for their own purposes, but then telling the public, regulators, and shareholders that no competent models existed? We're interested in what they were using internally and what they were telling the world.
The query comes after reports this fall from the website Inside Climate News, which found that as far back as 1977, Exxon's own scientists had warned that the burning of fossil fuels, the company's own product, would warm the planet and endanger humanity. After roughly a decade of funding white hat state-of-the-art research, the company pivoted in the late 80s to bankrolling efforts to cast doubt on climate change and campaigned against emissions-cutting legislation, including U.S. participation in the Kyoto Protocol. The L.A. Times and The Guardian came to similar conclusions. Lawmakers have also called for federal investigations from the Department of Justice and the Securities and Exchange Commission. ExxonMobil says it rejects the allegations. Observers, including myself on this show, have noted parallels to Big Tobacco's decades-long campaign of misinformation on the effects of smoking, for which companies are still paying out a 25-year, $246 billion settlement. The parallels are no accident.
The fossil fuel industry, like the tobacco industry before them, understood that if the public thought that the science wasn't settled, then their support for political action would be weak.
Naomi Oreskes is professor of the history of science at Harvard and author with Eric Conway of Merchants of Doubt, How a Handful of Scientists Obscured the Truth on Issues from Tobacco Smoke to Global Warming. Back in 2004, she and her co-author were investigating the scientists who were attacking their own colleagues, claiming that climate science wasn't settled when the vast majority of the scientific community said it was.
And what we discovered was the startling fact that several of the key people involved in climate change denial had also been involved in tobacco denial.
Name names?
Well, the key person we started off trying to understand was a man by the name of Fred Seitz. He had been a pioneer in solid-state physics after World War II. He had worked on the hydrogen bomb, and he had been the president of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences. So a very prominent and very brilliant man. In the 90s, he was working with a number of groups to challenge the scientific evidence of climate change. And what we found was that he had worked for many years for the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Corporation, where he had attacked the science related to the harms of tobacco. And he was using the same strategies and tactics now to attack the scientific evidence of man-made climate change.
I'll be darned, what a zany coincidence that is.
Oh, yes, exactly. Oh, my goodness, what a coincidence.
Now, I guess the biggest difference between what's happening now and what happened when the Justice Department targeted Big Tobacco in the 90s was that the U.S. Justice Department took a RICO approach. That's the Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act that enables law enforcement to essentially bundle a bunch of individual acts into a pattern of corruption and prosecute with a whole lot of investigative leeway. The New York Attorney General, Schneiderman, is doing something different. He's hanging his investigation on New York's Martin Act, which is meant to protect investors, shareholders in public companies. How is he doing that?
It is a crime to lie to your investors or to mislead them. And specifically, it's illegal to deny or hide risks that have serious implications for the profitability of your business. So if you know that your business could be seriously impacted by climate change, you have a legal obligation to share that information with your shareholders. The argument here and the reason why the Attorney General has undertaken this investigation under the Martin Act is because there would appear to be a fairly clear prima facie case that for the better part of 20 years, ExxonMobil was giving its shareholders information that was inconsistent with what the scientific community were saying about the climate risk. And now it is true that last year ExxonMobil issued a statement that was, I would say, quite a reasonable one, but that was in 2014. The world signed the United Nations Framework Convention in 1992. So the question is here, what has ExxonMobil been doing in those intervening 22 years?
This is not a novel legal approach. The New York Attorney General has developed a case under the Martin Act previously, no?
This week, Attorney General Eric Schneiderman announced a settlement with the Peabody Coal Company, and I haven't had a chance to look at the details yet. But I think the Peabody case is important because some people are now saying, well, why are you picking on ExxonMobil? There are some reasons why it may indeed be legitimate to single out ExxonMobil, but it's also the case that we have evidence that many fossil fuel companies, not just ExxonMobil, have engaged in climate change denial, have attacked scientists, etc.
Should we expect that Chevron and Texaco and BP, Shell, and others will be brought into this case before it's all over with?
I think that we will see other groups become at least the subject of subpoenas. We've seen that it's not just ExxonMobil. They were the most egregious in terms of the documentation we have for the very, very large number of other organizations they funded. But we also know that ExxonMobil was part of an organization known as the Global Climate Coalition. And the word coalition is the key word there. That organization included something like 24 or more organizations, including most of the major fossil fuel companies, a number of the automobile manufacturers, aluminum smelters, the American Highway Association. So there was a whole group of people who had an interest in defending the use of fossil fuels. So we've called this group the carbon combustion complex, industries that either sell fossil fuels or that rely on cheap fossil fuels for their businesses. The fact that they called themselves a coalition is telling us that there was a network of people who worked together to spread disinformation.
Well, one man's coalition is another man's conspiracy, which is precisely what the Justice Department would need to mount a RICO case. Correct?
Exactly. And I'm careful not to use the big C word, because for a lot of people that's a very, very fraught word. But exactly.
Now, in the Peabody case, there was a settlement with the coal company, but no financial reward that we know of. It was just an agreement to change its behavior henceforth. Does that make you a little nervous that there's just going to be a wrist slap and then return to the status quo?
To me, the best possible outcome in this story would be if ExxonMobil and the other fossil fuel companies would change their ways. I mean, that's really what we should all want out of this case. And by change their ways, I don't just mean what they are saying about climate science, because in that they actually have already changed. It's about their business model. The fossil fuel industry is at a crossroads, in my opinion. They can make the choice to do something different. These are very wealthy companies with tremendous technical capacity. It may not be as profitable in the short run, but it will be profitable in the long run. Or they can keep on doing what they're doing. So if the Martin Act investigations would lead to a major turnaround in how the corporate leadership at ExxonMobil is behaving, to me that would be an absolutely gigantic win, really, for all the people of the planet, as well as, yes, the polar bears and all the other plants and animals that are threatened by disruptive climate change.
Now, it's apparent that you're a better person than me. You'd be satisfied if the planet was saved just in the nick of time.
My goals are very low. I'm very modest in my aspirations.
Isn't there no part of you that wants to see these people, you know, in pillories?
You know, some people want to say this is just about being vindictive, but that's really, in my opinion, missing the point. If we go back to tobacco, I think there's a really important lesson in tobacco. There's certainly a place for financial settlements, and certainly many people are talking about whether ExxonMobil and other fossil fuel companies need to be made to pay for some of the damages driven by climate change. And I certainly think that's a very credible and important argument to be made. But you can also argue that on some level the tobacco settlement is a failure, because the tobacco industry is still operating. They've exported a lot of their product now to other countries where the rates of tobacco-related diseases are increasing, not decreasing. And they're also smuggling cigarettes illegally into Europe. There's a big court case pending about this right now. The tobacco industry is still a great force for destruction and damage in this world. So if we were to fine ExxonMobil some huge amount of money, but not stop disruptive climate change, that would not be a win, in my opinion.
Well, Yeah, it is now proven. You are indeed a better person than me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's great talking with you. Really appreciate the excellent questions.
Naomi Oreskes is professor of the history of science at Harvard and co-author of Merchants of Doubt, How a Handful of Scientists Obscured the Truth on Issues from Tobacco Smoke to Global Warming. Back in September, after speaking with Inside Climate News reporter Neela Banerjee about her investigation, I spoke to Richard Kyle, ExxonMobil's senior advisor for global public affairs. I asked him to explain why Exxon was so furious about what the website had reported.
Well, they have accused us of knowing for certain that climate change was a real problem in the early 1980s and then abandoning our research into that to fund climate denial. Nothing could be further from the truth. We have an uninterrupted, continuous 30-year history of researching this important topic. And in the last decade alone, we've spent more than $300 million into both reducing emissions in fossil fuels and researching and exploring alternative energy sources. The reporting is simply flat out wrong.
I don't believe the piece asserted that Exxon had scientific certainty. The piece I read said that Exxon was doing some of the early research about the possibilities, and those possibilities were alarming, but not that there was any scientific certainty about how it all would play out.
Well, the story also accuses us of then abandoning our research into that and getting into funding denial. And in fact, we have an uninterrupted history, 30 years and running, of doing research on this. Our own scientists and researchers have either authored or played significant contributing roles to more than 50 peer-reviewed journals on this topic. And as we know, over time, certainty and knowledge about the risks of climate change and causality became clearer in the late 1990s, for instance, in a way that wasn't possible in the early 1980s, which is the period of time they've chosen to write about. So the story suggests that we knew at a time when nobody did.
As early as the 70s, the National Academy of Sciences was sounding the alarms about the potential for catastrophic warming and melting of ice sheets and so on.
The key word here, though, the key word is potential. There were a range of possibilities people were considering. We and others were completely open to the idea that human activity could cause this, but there simply wasn't any certainty.
You mentioned the $300 million that ExxonMobil has spent over the last decade in pursuit of more science on this subject. In each of the past 2 years, ExxonMobil has earned $33 billion in profits. So $300 million over a decade, apart from the relatively small sum invested in research, there's also the matter that you're kind of changing the subject. This reporting by Inside Climate News doesn't really concern itself with what ExxonMobil has done lately. It's concerning itself with a very sharp change in corporate behavior and apparently strategy 25 years ago. Namely, that you dismantled some significant percentage of this research program and, beginning in about 1989, started pouring millions and millions of dollars in the funding of 36 organizations, some of which were transparently industry front groups and some which were right-wing economics advocacy groups that themselves spent decades in various degrees of climate denial.
The reporting here, Bob, recalls a famous saying from the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but not to their own facts. And the fact of the matter is, we have a continuous and uninterrupted commitment to climate change research.
I can list the names of the 36 organizations, some populated with fringe environmental scientists with quotation marks around it, and some by literally the same personnel who represented big tobacco in the 70s as it lied to the public and its own shareholders about the risks of smoking. And these people were spewing what is very clearly, as phrased by the Royal Academy of Sciences in Britain, disinformation. On the media's interest in all of this is partly the story by Inside Climate News. It's also partly the issue of how proactive Exxon was over a couple of decades in funding these groups and in printing these op-ed ads in the New York Times?
We don't fund those groups. As the science has emerged and become clearer, we're more committed than ever to researching this important topic.
We don't fund them, or we didn't fund them. You got out of the funding business 2009 or some such, but for 20 years before that, you
Bob,
poured...
I'm going to finish my thought here, Bob.
Please clarify this for me. Are not funding or did not fund them?
We are not funding.
Okay, so who cares? It's so simple. If you did fund these different disinformation campaigns to muddy the issues on climate science, the question is, why? Why go from a white hat operation that funds very serious research into a damage control operation that seeks to muddy the issues for the public? Why?
Bob, I reject that narrative. And again, context matters here. There is certainty now around climate change and the causes that didn't exist in the early 1980s. It didn't exist in the late 1980s. It didn't exist in the early 1990s. Once our company was satisfied that not only was it a real and growing and immediate concern, but human activity had something to do with it, we became even more committed to doing the kind of research that I've been describing to you.
You've characterized the Inside Climate News reporting as being flat wrong across a whole area of details. We just had a conversation with them in which they said that they submitted to you personally a long list of 30 or more specific questions tied to specific facts that they culled from the documentation that was from Exxon's own archives in many cases and peer-reviewed journals. They asked for your response to these questions. They say you declined to provide it.
They came to us at the 11th hour with a long list of questions and in three separate occasions declined to provide documents for our review that were not from publicly available areas. At no time did they produce any of these records to us for our examination.
In the journalism world that I live in, and you are a senior media advisor, so you should be well aware of this, it is not the news organization's responsibility to go to the subject or the source and say, here's what we have. It's its responsibility to ask questions and try to get answers. And they didn't get answers.
In the journalism world I lived in for 20 years before changing careers, if I had the goods on somebody, I would present them with the evidence and give them time to respond. We weren't afforded that opportunity and that courtesy. And my suspicion is the reason we weren't is because they knew if we had a chance to look at these documents and put them in context, they wouldn't have a story. We are committed to science and research around climate change. We have been uninterrupted for 30 years, and their reporting doesn't change that fact.
Uninterrupted, Dick?
I'm sorry?
Because the whole premise of their story is that it was very much interrupted, a very long detour in which Exxon went from a seeker of scientific evidence to a denier of scientific consensus.
That is patently untrue, and it does a great disservice to the scientists and researchers who have been looking into this and other important topics for us without interruption for more than 30 years now.
All right, Dick. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Richard Kyle is Senior Media Advisor for ExxonMobil. This has been an OTM Podcast Extra. If you want to be up on what's happening at OTM, subscribe to our newsletter at onthemedia.org/newsletter. I'm Bob Garfield.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.